It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
You know, I gotta wonder what kind of working relationship you'd have with Satan.
It's Mike Shope.
I've often wondered that. Like, he, they, I don't know what his pronouns are, or their pronouns. Anyway, Satan.
And the Bulldog.
Maybe, what's the upside of doing well?
Well, maybe they're too busy making everyone else's life hell.
Oh, boy.
And you might just be able to do your own thing if you're partnered with Satan.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
They're too busy, you know, making Scott Norwood miss field goals.
Oh, come on.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Guy misses one kick. I'm not going to say that I can't breathe right now, because that would be an overstatement.
Mm-hmm.
But they're taking Brock Bowers from us for week one and maybe longer. Because he had a knee injury last week. I don't know. I don't know. Thank God Evan is here. Because Evan will know. Evan Silva established the run. You know, you think, Evan, maybe this doesn't necessarily speak for you. You think you did enough work. To quote work, to get you to tonight. I mean, I was just telling Bulldog, like, my wife and kids are out of the house on Wednesdays. Perfect. Because this morning I'm just, you know, all the lineups and everything. And then 5 minutes ago, no Brock Bowers for at least a game. So we go right back to the drawing board, so to speak. It's never dull, is it?
No, it's absolutely devastating for somebody who had Brock Bowers. You know, Brock Bowers was set up to absolutely obliterate, I mean, the NFL record books this season from an on-paper standpoint. Quarterback upgrade, huge offensive system upgrade, such little target competition. We know, even last year when he was banged up almost all season, he was still fourth among tight ends in fantasy points per game, and now we're not going to have him. I know that the reports say, what, a game or two? We'll see, man. You guys know about the PCL injuries, especially with your own tight end, Dalton Kincaid. Yeah. I mean, right. I feel like that has ripped away a year and a half of his career. We saw it rip away a couple of years from Kyle Pitts, Ricky Pearsall, you know, Rashad Perryman. I think it contributed to his downfall in Baltimore. It's just, it can be really a really, really bad injury that doesn't just linger for one season, but lingers for multiple seasons. And it's almost like, God, I should have known.
I'm not even sure what to say. Like, hopefully it's not all that, right? But what's interesting to me, and it's just been a few minutes here since we started talking that this came down, but that the injury was last week, and this is one of those, Evan, where, like, okay, well, couldn't we have known that he hurt his knee last week? And, you know, did they need to wait a week? Maybe they did for swelling or something. I'm not a doctor, obviously. But, back to it. We'll see. Don't have to fix this by tonight.
The good news is, if there's any silver lining, is that Michael Mayer was not drafted in a lot of leagues. And there's a decent chance that if you drafted Brock Bowers, you have a ready-made replacement for him potentially on the waiver wire. Michael Mayer was a record-setting tight end at Notre Dame, a second-round pick in the draft. You should be able to pick him up if you drafted Brock Bowers, and he'll be a good start until Bowers comes back.
Was he a Mackey Award winner? It's your team.
He was. Michael Mayer finished second in the Mackey Award voting behind Brock Bowers in 2023.
Well, at least you weren't forced to swear here, which would have been bad for us had you done that. All right, Evan. Well, apart from this little bombshell today, I mean, most of the drafting season obviously is over. How do you think it went? How did it go for you personally?
In light of the recency bias caused by this and how high I had Brock Bowers ranked, I mean, I'm not feeling great right now, but we will have a little bit better idea in week one. I mean, these are real games. This is not, you know, teams out here playing vanilla throughout the preseason. We will see how depth charts are set to begin the season. I mean, this is very, very real. All this stuff that's about to happen, we'll get 60 to 70 snaps from each team. So I don't know. I mean, we're going to see about all that, Joe.
Yeah.
Well, How do you feel? You mentioned Kincaid here, and one of the things, obviously, we've been following this summer is, you know, the year began, Evan, and I'm sure you're aware of this, with Brandon Bean and Joe Brady both talking about, you know, load management through the spring and even into the summer, and what we've had is him never really showing up on a, you know, DNP list all through summer.
Right.
He's as healthy as maybe he's been since he was a rookie, and I don't even know how healthy he was as a rookie because he came in not having worked out at the combine or anything because of injury. So that might be, I don't know, how good a bet do you think Dalton Kincaid is right now?
I think he's a really good bet. And I've thought this for a few weeks. As you mentioned, he, knock on wood, stayed healthy seemingly every day throughout training camp. That's been the big thing for him. I don't think it's – some people are like, oh, it's because he can't block. And I don't think that he's like some sort of sensational blocker. Neither was Colston Loveland as a rookie last year. I think it's been because of the injuries. And as you mentioned, the load management. And now that he's sort of shown that maybe he is past that PCL stuff, he made it through training camp 100%. We have Joe Biscaglia out here saying he believes that Dalton Kincaid can advance to becoming a 60 to 65% player on offense after last year being a 38% player. I'm optimistic. I mean, I think that there are scenarios where, you know, there's been a lot of talk about DJ Moore, where Dalton Kincaid actually emerges as the Bills, you know, quote-unquote number one receiver this year, takes a really big leap. There have been so many tight ends throughout recent history that have taken a little while to get to where they need to be a true breakout. I mean, the list is unending. It's really rare for a tight end like Brock Bowers to jump in as a rookie or even as a second-year player and be dominant right off the jump. And so it would fall really in line with historical norms for Dalton Kincaid to take a few extra years and this to be his breakout. I actually think it's going to be.
That's McBride, for sure, who will now be tight end one, I would think, in whatever drafts are left.
How ready to talk about how impactful that could be for the Bills are you, Evan?
What, you mean a big step forward for Dalton Kincaid?
Correct.
I mean, to me, I think it's something that they need. You know, this defense, I don't know what their defense is going to be like this year because they still have, you know, so I think that they're gonna need to compensate for that, with, you know, if there's any kind of a transition to the new defensive coordinator, Jim Leonard, and, you know, still using a lot of McDermott's players. I don't know exactly how that's going to go, and I think that the Bills might need to score more points because of that, and to have, you know, a truly dynamic, like Dalton Kincaid led all tight ends in yards per route run last year, which is a great measure of efficiency. He was third in the NFL regardless of position in yards per route run. I think that they need that. I think that DJ Moore, based on the fact that one of the smartest offensive play callers in the league reduced DJ Moore's role last season and then traded him away in Ben Johnson, I don't know that he is capable of being a true number one. I think the Bills need Dalton Kincaid to be their number one. I think that he's got a good chance to, as long as he stays healthy.
Well, you've kind of answered any DJ Moore question here already, but, you know, what has it sounded like to you this summer with him? He's maybe obviously going to be somebody we ask everybody who comes on our show about. And he's always been kind of this polarizing guy, you know, like you want to like him, but it make excuses for who his quarterback is, yet there's always maybe a little bit left wanting. But it sounds like you're mostly out.
Yeah, I was just sort of on the fence.
Okay.
In terms of where I had him ranked in fantasy, I was maybe a little bit below his ADP. I drafted him a little bit, not that much. I mean, a little bit. I did like 70 drafts. I probably had him on like six teams. You know, so that's kind of where I was on DJ Moore. I just, you know, I think he's on the back nine of his career. You know, being a 29-year-old wide receiver, that's when the decline usually starts. And then what happened with him and Ben Johnson last year, and it's not because he's like a bad guy or anything. It's because I think that Ben Johnson didn't, you know, saw him as a declining player. I mean, I think he'll be okay. I don't think he's going to, you know, rip it up. I think that Dalton Kincaid is a player who could rip it up, again, if everything goes right health-wise.
While we're on the Bills, Evan, James Cook leads the league in rushing. Last year on the heels of 16 rushing touchdowns the year before, The touchdowns didn't dip too badly, still had 12. We're wondering if whether or not maybe there's an uptick in receiving for him, remembering that he was originally drafted as a receiving back and then just turned into this number one workhorse type guy. Ty Johnson is one of the Bills who is not practicing today. He's been their third down back, so maybe even this week in week one, there's more on Cook's plate. What are you doing with him?
I mean, I love James Cook. And actually, if you look at the game last year that the Bills and the Texans played, you know, it was a bad one for the Bills offense, but James Cook was the one, you know, the one offensive bright spot. James Cook is freaking awesome. This offense is built to run. It has been built to run since Joe Brady became the offensive coordinator, you know. And so, yeah, I think that James Cook is great, a great fantasy pick. I think he's going to have a great season. And if there was one player I would bet on this week to have at least a decent game against the best defense in the league on the road, it would, you know, among the Bills' skill position players, it would be James Cook.
That's interesting, Evan. I mean, we've, of course, been focused on this game for months as it's the opener. And also the Bills have lost there like six times in a row in Houston. And they don't have a lot of that kind of streak working right now in their recent history. And Houston, by the way, has won all those games without scoring more than 23 points in any of them. So they're not all Josh Allen games, but you're pointing your finger at Cook. And, you know, last year is a good example. 17 for 116 and a touchdown, as I look at it, in that game against Houston. Quite a matchup for week one for them, for the Bills. With all the winning they've done, it might be the toughest matchup possible, I think, for them going to Houston.
Dude, Chope, I just turned in my write-up for the game, and that's exactly what I wrote. Like, this could be the toughest matchup that the Bills face all season. I know that there has been some support among sharper bettors for the Texans to win the game straight up. I wound up picking the Texans to win, I think, 20 to 17 or something like that. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. You know, the Texans have an incredible defense, a defense that got better since last season, and they were right there with the Seahawks in terms of being the best defense in the league last year. So it's going to be a tough one. I think the Bills will have to grind out and win a close game. The Texans are going to want to play a close game, give the ball to David Montgomery relentlessly. You know, that has been one of the Bills' biggest weaknesses, the run defense. They're still light from the Sean McDermott era. And, I think that's what the Texans want to do. They're going to want to run the ball a ton with David Montgomery.
Does that, as we focus on these two teams together, the week one matchup, does that slow you down relative to, you know, the market, as they say, on Nico Collins? Or is this maybe a particular kind of game where you might think it's more about Montgomery?
I think that after the Texans lost Jaden Higgins to a torn ACL, you just kind of throw it out the window. And, like, Nico Collins could lead the NFL in target share, in air yard share. I mean, he's just going to get so much volume, and he's awesome. And, I mean, he's going to be a big problem. Those deep crossing routes that Nico Collins can run, that's going to be a big problem in the back end of the Bills' defense. Not that they don't have, you know, some pretty good personnel back there. I think Christian Benford could be a tough matchup for Nico Collins one-on-one. But he's going to be running those deep crossers, and he's really hard to defend on those. And then it's going to be Dalton Schultz underneath, I think. And that's going to be those guys are going to spearhead the Texans' passing offense.
Evan Silva, our guest, established the run. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. I'm sure Mike Leone is listening, taking notes on all these comments that Evan is making, your colleague at Established the Run. What do you think tonight? So, interesting, I think, that New England is only a 3-point underdog in Seattle, given how the Super Bowl looked, without Henderson, if that matters. Does that reflect maybe a general skepticism about the Seahawks losing Clint Kubiak? I mean, do you think that that's in the air with this game or this season ahead?
That's where I'd start, yeah. Also, year to year, you know, I think that the Seahawks are going to have a great defense again. But maintaining being, you know, a top two defense year over year, that's really more difficult than maintaining a top two offense year to year. That can be a very volatile thing to rely on, is defensive dominance year over year over year. And then, yeah, you add in the loss. Like, we don't know what the offense is necessarily going to look like under Brian Fleury. And we know that it surpassed so many expectations last year under Clint Kubiak. I don't know if you remember, but last offseason, people were like, oh, this offense is going to be terrible. The offensive line is going to be horrible. Sam Darnold can't deal with pressure. Right. You know, and it's differing now. The feeling is different now, but yeah, there's the offense could see a lot of regression this season. Also, it's not like they upgraded their pass catcher core very much. They only have one guy. They've got JSN. You know, maybe Rashid Shaheed can give them a little bit downfield, you know, after his in-season acquisition. But yeah, that's why I had JSN ranked a little bit lower than a lot of other people. I wound up with Amon-Ra St. Brown ahead of him. Just the bankability of the offense isn't there in Seattle.
On the New England side of tonight's game, the two big skill position adds are obvious. A.J. Brown and, of course, Romeo Doubs significantly behind that, but still maybe impactful. How about both of them and what they're going to do for New England?
Tonight, you know, it's always hard playing against, you know, Mike McDonald defense. So I don't know. It's going to be really interesting. You know, A.J. Brown is a player that a bunch of his rate stats were among his career lows last year in Philadelphia. I know he's dealing with a hamstring injury. He had some sort of a fallout with the team. He's another 29-year-old receiver. But all the reports on him were glowing throughout training camp. And so I'll be really interesting to see. It's going to be. I don't have any bold predictions. I'm ready to watch the game.
Right, but as far as the season goes as well, you know, New England. A lot of the talk, especially here in Buffalo, Evan, about them is they played such a soft schedule. Of course, the Bills played a pretty similar schedule last year, but that New England sort of got fat on that. The playoff path was pretty cakey. You know, they got C.J. Stroud in weather. They got Jarrett Stidham in weather and made it to the Super Bowl. So there's maybe a little bit of a paper tiger notion about them. Do you, I don't know, how do you feel about that?
The Patriots, if they're going to be, I mean, I think that the trajectory for Drake May is going to continue to go upward. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, in the Super Bowl, they had two of their rookie offensive linemen playing hurt, like clearly playing hurt. Those guys are healthy and now in their second seasons. They acquired A.J. Brown. You know, so I think that for as much regression as people might expect for the Patriots, based on all, they played the easiest schedule, whatever, like they also got better. Mm-hmm. So Mike Vrabel always churns out a good team. It doesn't matter what personnel Mike Vrabel has. Like he had the Titans under Ryan Tannehill as like the number one or two AFC seed one year. I mean, he's an awesome, awesome coach. Josh McDaniels is a great offensive coordinator. The Patriots are going to be really good.
Two more for me, Evan, on a couple of players that have been interesting storylines in fantasy, recognizing that almost everybody's draft, I mean, it should be over by now with, you know, there's a game tonight.
There is a game tonight, yeah.
But the Green Bay backfield, it's hard to know how to play it. Jacob's status is up in the air. His court date gets moved up to, I think, tomorrow. Like, what is there a strategy you've sort of relied on when it comes to the Packers, or has it just been too volatile to really trust anything?
You're just talking about the backfield or the offense in general?
You know, both, because their pass catching group is, you know, it's like chef's choice almost.
Yeah, well, you know, Matt LaFleur has been saying it consistently throughout the offseason. He reiterated again today that they are going to go with these three receivers because in recent years, like, they would play five receivers. They'd use a five-man receiver rotation on game days. And it was annoying to fantasy players because, you know, the starters would only be playing, like, 65% of the snaps, whereas, you know, guys on other teams are playing every single snap. And so that really limited the ceiling and lowered the floors for the players that were theoretically starters. Now they're going to go with Christian Watson, Matthew Golden, and Jaden Reed on almost every single snap. That's going to be really big for them, for those players' consistency in the box score. when we're talking about the running, it's going to be really touch and go with the running back situation. They're playing the Vikings in week one. Mm-hmm. So that's a really tough defense to play guys against. Chris Brooks is going to be used a lot because he's their pass protection back. He's not going to get the ball a lot, but they're going to need him because the Vikings blitz at one of the highest rates in the league. They're going to need their best pass protector, and I think they'll mix in Marshawn Lloyd. Marshawn Lloyd is their most explosive guy with the ball in his hands, but they're just going to mix him in. So it's going to be really touch and go. You know, that's why nobody was using high draft picks on Packers players. Marshawn Lloyd wound up being like a 6th, 7th, 8th round, you know, sort of wild card lottery ticket. But it's going to be touch and go with a really tough matchup in week one.
And lastly, Evan, how about San Francisco? I had a team I was looking at today with Mike Evans and DeJuan Stribling. And, you know, you drafted Mike Evans, you start Mike Evans at this point if he's going to be healthy. But is Stribling interesting to you?
Absolutely. It's going to be another touch-and-go situation. Stribling actually went around the same areas in drafts that Marshawn Lloyd did. We want Stribling to get to a point where we know that he's going to be on the field a ton, that he's not losing snaps to a guy like DeMarcus Robinson or one of the younger sort of rotational receivers. I mean, DeJuan Stribling looked awesome in the preseason. That doesn't guarantee that in week one he's going to be out there, you know, enough to be relied on in fantasy. I think Mike Evans is a must start in week one. If you're going to use Mike Evans, you use him at the early in the season when he's healthy, you know, relatively. And he's an old player. You want to bet on those players early in the season because they don't always hold up over the course of a season.
Evan, I've had another great offseason listening to you all the time. I just really enjoy your work, and here's to a great season. Let's win big money. What do you think? Why not?
Let's do it, guys. Let's do it, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Thanks, Evan. Evan Silva from Establish the Run. He is joining us from Chicago, perhaps even O'Hare, actually.
It could have been, yes. Right.
I've heard him say, and Ross Tucker does this, when he's doing a radio hit, he'll go for a walk. So he'll walk and talk.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, great. You can hear it, though.
Right.
I mean, I don't know what he was doing. Maybe he was sailing at Lake Michigan or something. I don't know. Yeah. You know, we got there.
Yeah. Let's win money. That's why you do all this?
No, it's not. It should be. And it's. I'm not even kidding. It should be. It isn't.
Pride.
I mean, I'd love
to
win.
It's just for pride.
I'm still in fantasy football. I still think of myself as the gardener in an old movie called Being There with Peter O'Toole.
Oh, sure. Yep.
Where he is like, he's dimwitted. Is that a term you can say?
Sure. Yep.
But people find him to be really deep because he has like two-word answers for everything, but people are just, he goes, the show will never have sounded older than this. He goes on Dinah.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
He goes on Dinah.
Yep.
And he really has nothing to say, and people think he's just brilliant.
He's so quiet.
He's quiet.
A deep thinker.
He's my grandmother's line that she would say, the less you say, the more people think you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he really just doesn't know what to say.
Right.
And he goes miles. So that's what I don't know how I ended up in all this fantasy world.
I should really make an effort to see that movie because I would say my favorite Wilco album is named after that movie.
All right,
Being There is their second album as a band, so it's way back, like late 90s. And I've never seen the movie, but I've read numerous times that they named the record after the movie.
Yeah, because suddenly I started getting invited into like expert drafts, like oh this guy. What am I doing here?
Hmm.
But then you sort of learn it.
It's your and it's your status as an award-winning radio talk show host.
Oh, the awards! Yeah. I can't even hear you because they're plugged in my ears right now.
Yep.
All the trophies, all the Marconis. What have we won? Not really anything.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Couple things.
I needed to put award-winning in front of that.
It's only 26 years. I mean, it's got to be right around the corner. Those trophies, those awards, those honors, accolades.
They're holding them back until we get to 30.
Yeah, they want us to prove ourselves first. Sal Capaccio coming up at 5. Mike Shope and the Bulldog here. This is WGR.
Call or text WGR.
Caller 5 at 716-221-4WGR. That's 4947. Wins a $50 gift card to Connor's Restaurant in West Seneca on Seneca Street. Every Wednesday, score four Connor's Beef on Weck meals for just $55 or one for $15 because Connor's is better. 716-221-4947. I think spinning off of Evan Silva's appearance, just a fantasy thought in terms of tonight, I think there are four must-start players, and only four. Is four a lot for a game?
I don't think that's a lot.
It's not a lot.
No.
It's not a little.
No.
Right? Four?
Right.
How many would there be in the Bills game? Allen Cook, Nico.
Collins, David Montgomery.
Yeah, probably. DJ Moore?
Dalton Kincaid, if you have him, I think probably are counting on him if you drafted him. If you drafted him like where Evan was talking about.
Borderline.
Yeah.
Maybe. But Moore, I think, probably is that.
Yeah, that's probably right, too. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think four is a lot. Let me take a run at it.
Sure.
A.J. Brown, Drake May, Jackson Smith and Jigba, and Jadarian Price.
Price is the one, like, it's really three, and then maybe Price would be four. I think it's maybe only three. You know, it's week one. Who knows?
Right.
Is he going to start for them? So he didn't even start for his college team, Jadarian Price,
right,
last year, because they had Jeremiah Love, Notre Dame. But he was still a first-round pick.
I would imagine.
I think so.
Is Charbonnet healthy?
No.
I feel like the summer, right. Then he's, who else would it be?
So it's George Holani, like a preseason darling from last year that worked his way into some garbage time stuff last year. Charbonnet got hurt in the playoffs, and he played some. And then Emmanuel Wilson. So I think Price has got to be the starter.
Price is, I would bet him over 20 carries.
Ooh. Well, then he's definitely in your lineup. If you're right.
Yeah, I mean, what do I know? I mean, I'm not, it's not my lane, really, but I feel like he's almost by default, like, is going to be their first-round pick, healthy.
Yeah.
Come on. Replacing Kenneth Walker. I mean, those other guys have roles, but I think he's the dude.
It's an interesting one, isn't it, though?
Yeah.
Like, to go with, the last guy won the Super Bowl MVP and left.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going with a rookie, a backup rookie. I mean, he was the second running back picked, but still, it's a little shaky. But okay, hey, yeah, Price would be four.
I think his draft status mostly does away with the idea that he was a backup.
Yeah, that's probably right. That doesn't matter anymore, right?
Right.
Is your boy playing tonight? Emin Wari?
I don't know. Yeah,
questionable.
Right. Yeah, that feels like that might be right up to warm ups kind of thing, or inactives and all that sort of deal. Yeah.
He had surgery in July on his ankle.
Yeah.
So you might understand it if he weren't back yet.
I would. Yeah. Yeah.
Ty Johnson is not back yet, and that's been a while. Is that a month?
Right about that. He was maybe more. When was the open, the blue and red, the PSL practice, the PSL holder practice? Because that's, I believe, that's the evening he got hurt.
That's probably, so that's at like least a month
August
ago.
8th, I think. So, yeah, I mean, maybe almost a month right on the nose, or real close anyway. And, we still don't, I haven't seen it. I mean, the injury report has still not come out. Joe Brady played, you know, just going to extract every ounce of deniability he can from telling you about anyone who's hurt at all. So unlike his predecessor, who would lead off the Wednesday news conference with a list of guys who weren't going to be practicing or would be, you know, limited in any way, whatever, McDermott usually would read a list, and then the injury report would come out, and we'd have to figure, oh, there's another name that he didn't mention. Maybe something happened during practice, that kind of thing. Brady just punted on that altogether. Just, I'm not saying anything about anything, and you guys can just go watch and see who's out there and who's not, and then the injury report comes later. He didn't say any of that, but that's basically how he treated the whole thing this afternoon.
Okay.
So
we're I'm not sure I can really object to that.
Yeah.
As much as I might like to.
Maybe he'll do that all year. I don't know. But once we get through a game week, right, we have a better and really today we'll have an idea who's hurt, and I don't know what kind of time frame they'll put on anybody, or you know, if they'll even have to. Maybe eventually he will have to put a time frame on a Ty Johnson, or Jordan Hancock was the other guy that was on the longer list last week who weren't participating or maybe working off to the side and that kind of thing. Those two are the only ones who weren't participating today. So I don't know when we'll have anything definitive, but we'll get it. We're going to get an injury report. I doubt, because of the way Brady is handling this, we're going to get a designation on, like, he's out. I don't think that happens on a Wednesday unless a guy's, like, you know, really, really hurt. So they'll probably play games all week with it, with Johnson and Hancock.
Love it.
But anyway, still waiting on that, the injury report. Because Shakir was participating, but that's just, you know, we're into the part of the year where the media can watch the outset. So you really can't get a gauge on whether Shakir, I mean, we know he was, you know, dressed in a normal jersey, wasn't off to the side for like the stretching and the early whatever they do there that the media is allowed to watch. But we still don't know if he's going to be listed as limited or what, Shakir, until that injury report comes out.
All right. We have Sal in less than half an hour, and maybe we'll have that in time for Sal.
We can hope.
We can.
I'm gonna choose to hope.
We can hope.
I'm choosing to be hopeful about
that. I just want to quit it with all the other injuries and like not hear any more about who after Brock Bowers is suddenly going to miss games. That is not fun. Patrick is with us. Hello, Patrick.
Hey, Mike and Mr. Parker. Thanks for taking my call.
What's your thing?
I'm a little bit nervous about this week's game. I mean, a couple points here, a couple points there on the point spread, but it's going to be scary with our history, but it's not the end of the world. It's a very difficult game to win on the road. So looking forward to that. Miss the days when all the games are at 1 o'clock on a Sunday. I mean, that's definitely something I wish would be every week. And also, I wanted to mention if any of you watched the tennis last night at the U.S. Open.
I did. I watched Jessica Pegula's the first two sets. I saw her win the second set to avoid getting knocked out, and I felt I was tired. It started late, and I fell asleep. I did not see the men's match, which started very, very late.
See, that bulldog is where I took a nap during the Pegula match. You know, I love Jess, and I want her to win, and I woke up, and it was third set at like 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah,
Alcaraz, who by far is the best player in the world, but Shelton came through. It was amazing. And Shelton Tiafoe, I don't know who to root for, but anyhow, enjoy listening to your guys' show. Thanks for taking my time. And Fritos are an all-American shit. Thank you.
Oh, well. All right. Wow, Patrick, covering some bases there.
I mean, if my kids were playing at 2 in the morning, I'm not sure I would watch it.
Right.
I just,
yeah.
It's funny. It's sports has seemed to go one way, putting everything on, even if it's not necessarily convenient for you or even for the sake of the competition, at a time when like most people can watch it. I mean, they've moved kickoff times around. It's always like the second day of the baseball season, there are no day games, which is to me like that should be criminal.
Yep.
But hey, you know, people watch TV at night. They're working. Yet, the U.S. Open manages every year to have some match go into the middle of the night. Who is watching that? Patrick is watching that. G is watching that. Like, all right, somebody is. I feel like tennis is just, it's huge coverage. Like ESPN, HBO Now, Tennis Channel, lesser. Like every match is on. Every pro everything is on, but I just don't know how many people are really there. But they have like these super luxury high-end sponsors right?
The whole thing has become...
It's the most expensive cars, jewelry, private jets.
The story of... One of the stories of the tournament has been the ticket prices and how it's become, like, influencers are in there and, like, everything, if they're using dynamic pricing like everyone does now, like concerts do, like, the wealthiest of the wealthy are driving the prices up to the point where you can't get a nosebleed seat for $800.
My wife was there last weekend. She grew up there. Like, she was a tennis player as a kid, and she lived within an hour of the city. They would go to the Open and romanticize about how you could walk around and see top players on outer courts and basically just sit next to them. Like, it was just so accessible. Mm-hmm. And she said to me multiple times about last weekend, I don't recognize this place.
Yeah.
It's all just, like, the grandstand is moved, and, you know, you've just got... It's just massively big, and my son wanted one particular kind of shirt from the gift shop, and that was her breaking point because it was like $250 for like a polo or something. Like, she just wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
So she bought us lanyards as gifts from the Open, which, you know, it's the thought that counts. Like, just couldn't.
Yeah.
She went to see Michael Antonius play and got to twice. He won and then lost, but just kept talking about how I don't even know where I am here. It just isn't at all what I'm used to.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's probably a lot of fans who used to go in the day.
I mentioned Jessica Pegula. If people weren't watching, I watched the first set was very tough for her. She seemed very frustrated. There was some banging of the racket, and the telecast was talking a lot about, like, well, if she would just maybe give a fist bump, she might get the crowd behind her. She was playing a fellow American, though. But it just seemed like she didn't have her A game, it seemed like, early. But she came through and won the second set on a great shot. And, you know, if you're like me, like, I wanted to watch it, third set. But, like, that was a great shot. She looks excited. She's going to win. It was easy. I was falling asleep. Easy for me to turn it off, and I did, and she won.
You were right.
But she was really – I thought she was in really tough. Not so much the opponent being – she just was off. She was just missing stuff, double faults, and it was just a sloppy – I didn't read or hear what she said after, but, I mean, she stayed with it. I think she toughed one out.
Well, there are two people then at least that watched the match in the middle of the night.
This guy.
NG. Yeah, I mean, that's...
My friend Ted watched, too. I saw him on Facebook talking about it.
Three.
Yep.
I mean, it's a badge of honor if you make it.
Yes.
If you watch a 20-inning baseball game or something, like, you just... I'd stay to the end.
Four overtime hockey.
Right.
Same sort of thing. Like,
it is kind of like that, but I was up late enough to see that this match was happening. I never had any instinct to look at it, because... What kind of time commitment is that likely to be? And I don't care who wins.
Right.
So I just, I chose bed. That's my story. Sal Capaccio in less than 20 minutes. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here, WGR.